hear a talk on steps 4 and 5, with a focus on fear and sex, made of searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. So please help me give a warm welcome to Brenda J from McKinney, Texas. Come on in, Brenda.
God, I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do your will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I will help of your power, your love, and your way of life. May I do your will always. My name is Brenda. I'm a recovering alcoholic. Hello, everybody. I come bearing tidings of comfort and joy. I'm glad to see you all. Sunny, I thank you for the invitation. I thank you for your patience in trying to get me booked during the school year, in the middle of the week, here in the middle of the day, and also, most importantly, for your friendship. You're one of those folks that I get an opportunity to watch and follow, and always be grateful to you for your example. I did find out it's recorded, so I had to change a bunch of stuff I was going to say today. I tell everybody, look, I'm like 800 years old, okay? Like, I've been here, and Daniel, we were all somewhere else, and like that. Somebody said to me yesterday, you probably need to stop going around telling people you 800 in case we ever have a court case. And it's recorded now, about 800. Y'all belong to me. So if you're walking around the world wondering, I don't feel connected, I don't belong to anybody, I don't know who I am, I don't know if anybody really loves me just the way I am, well, let me tell you, all those questions are answered today. You belong to me, I belong to God, we all belong to love. And so I want you to come all the way in and sit all the way down. Before I begin, I got sober July 3rd of 1990, and have been sobered and accounted for all of that time. And I do need for you to know that I have given myself permission to be imperfect and enough at the same time, that I need help every day to maintain a rational perspective, that I reserve the right to have problems and to make mistakes, to cry, and to not always have my answers. And it is far more important to me than the time I've been here than it is what I'm doing with that time now. So they've asked me to speak on 4 and 5 on fear and sex. Well, of course, I could get that done in 30 minutes. So I'm going to share fast. Okay, and y'all need to listen fast as well. Okay, I like to keep a piece of paper in front of me when I'm talking because I never know what God's up to. But if I'm talking about fear and I'm talking about sex, I should probably write down the name of the thing that scares me the most at the top of my paper. Like, what is the thing I am most afraid of today? Now you're at home, so like nobody's gonna see this. And as soon as we get done with this talk, you can mark through it. But for my purposes here, I always have to concentrate because I forget that one of the objectives is to take the stuff that I'm hearing on Zoom and apply it to my own life. Because if not, all I have is a notebook filled with paper and notes, and we cut down a tree for no significant reason. And so I take notes, I write them down, I write down the thing I'm most afraid of. And as far as the sex is concerned, I write down the name of the person that when I think about it, it makes me do this. Oops. It makes me cringe. That's the name of the person that belongs there for me. There's two sets of folks that I'm not talking to this morning. I have a really short runway here. Usually, I take a little bit more time to get us settled, get us in the space, help you trust me, let you see me. But we have a really short runway this morning. And so, because of that, this stuff, if you're less than 3 years sober, most of this stuff is not going to make sense to you. I would recommend that you take notes anyway, because the day you turn three, you're going to need this information. And also, I'm not talking to those of you who are in the middle of a deep and profound grief experience. If your mother just died, or you just lost a baby, or your divorce just became final, or your dog died. I'm not talking to you, not this morning. I am going instead to issue an invitation to have you lay down in the bottom of the boat and let the rest of us row. So the whole idea with sharing my experience, strength, and hope with the people that I sponsor is that they find out at 5 years what I didn't know until 10 years. Or they figure out by year seven what I didn't figure out until 15. Like, that's one of the great charges for me as a sponsor. So it's twofold. One, I have a friend who says, my goal is to cut 10 years off your bullshit. It's her quote. I didn't cuss. It was her quote. I had to tell it because it's a quote. Okay, let's move on. Bobby Earl, long time member of Alcoholics Anonymous, used to say, I didn't come to AA because I had a language problem, but I completely honor that request. So and so I'm looking on here today, and I have the opportunity to see many of my friends, those of you with whom I have journeyed since the beginning of pandemic, and those of you who have had the privilege of meeting in person. I will be in Boston in January. Looking forward to seeing some of you folks there. So I don't want to wander off like I know some about some I don't know none about, but apparently the way that they take the impurities out of metal is that they'll put it in a container and turn the fire on up under it, right? And they turn the fire and everything that's not pure rises to the top. And then they skim it off the top and keep it on the fire. And then what's not pure rises to the top. That is the function of 12 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous for me. Now, it goes without saying, sorry, I'm the only one I'm talking about. And the only thing I'm referencing is my own experience. Now, I'm not going to read the book to you. I'm not going to quote it to you. I'm not going to say, and then it says this, and this is what means. And I'm not doing that because you can go get that everywhere else. But what I'm going to tell you is, what does it take to practice emotional integrity? What does it take to practice emotional sobriety in these areas? You know, we all know the mechanics of four. We all know the mechanics of five. So to those of you between three and right now not grieving, I came to see you this morning. So that was the end of the runway. Pema Chodron has a story that she tells. You probably should go look for it because I'm going to tell some other story and you're going to think she told it. But she talks about the fact that this young lady was in training to become a Buddhist monk. And her teacher said to her, now here's the final challenge. You must go fight fear. And the woman's like, go fight fear? She said, yeah. And sent her out. And the woman went to a little place where she often found fear. Not funny, we know where to find fear, we just won't go look there. So she goes to this place where she knows fear has been. And she says to fear, I'm asking your permission to fight you. And fear said, thank you. And fear walked right up to her until they were face to face and started screaming in her face. And the woman just stood there because she doesn't know how to fight this. She doesn't know how to fight this. And she's sweating and her heart is pumping and she's afraid and she forgot everything she knew and she forgot she's an AA and she forgot because she thinks she's gonna die because fear is screaming in her face. That's what fear does. It approaches me, stands right in front of me, and screams in her face. And then this happened. Fear stopped screaming, leaned into the young lady, and said, I have no power. I have no power unless you do the thing I tell you. That means to me that if the things that fear is screaming about in my face, if I don't act on those things, fear has no power. Now, that's good news to most of us and bad news to some of us because there was a time when wouldn't even do the hard things in AA. I wouldn't do the things of substance. I wouldn't do the things that the book and my relationship with God and the words in the sharing, they call me forward not to have 1 year sober over and over and over again. The fact, look, I bow when people go to speak. In any meeting I'm at, whether I'm in person or on Zoom, when somebody says, my name is so and so and whatever, I bow because what happened was that their life just consented to being seen and heard. And I think that is something holy, for lack of better words. That's something significant. That's something important. That's something of a watershed moment, whatever it is. And so I bow to welcome that. But if I won't do what fear is telling me I will, then fear has no power. And the reason that that's not such good news to some of us is, I would say to myself for a long time, I can't do that. I cannot go back and make those amends. I cannot surrender to God without reservation. I cannot write down that resentment. I cannot come to believe. I cannot continue to take inventory. I cannot because I'm afraid. That's how that would end. I cannot because I'm afraid. I cannot go because I'm afraid. Now, don't get me wrong. If you want to jump off a cliff somewhere, like literally, physically, goodbye. I mean, congratulations that you have that kind of thing. I'm not going with you. I'm going to have to report to the popo what happened after you jumped. But in Alcoholics Anonymous is a constant invitation to jump. They don't make parachutes to open on land. And I know folks in AA walking around with brand new parachutes, and it's all right because it's where each of us are. But they're, 20 years sober with the price tag on the shoe, walking around telling folks they have one. And I'm like, did you jump? They're like, well, no. And I'm like, well, what you wearing your parachute around for? I don't know. Somebody had to have those sore questions to me. That's what I'm doing here this morning. I came with all the hard questions because there's something missing for me in my life if I am 33 years sober, afraid of the stuff I was afraid of before I got here. I was afraid of rejection. I was afraid of love. I was afraid of that they'd stay. I was afraid that they'd leave. I was afraid of spiders. I was afraid. I mean, come on now. I was afraid of all of it. For me, there's a problem. If I'm 33 years sober, still, I want to be afraid of new things. Now, you think that I'd know enough to not want to be afraid? That's not ever anything I pray for. I never say to God, please help me not be afraid. I say to God, please stay with me when the fear comes. I expect to be afraid. I was with my therapist recently. Okay, wait, everybody hydrate because y'all are completely getting carried away. Relax. I don't know who raised the temperature of this meeting. Hold up. So I was with my therapist the other day and I said to her, I said, I'm having a feeling I can't identify, which is weird for me because I've been in companionship with my emotions and my feelings for a very long time. We know each other intimately. And so I said to her, I said, I'm having a feeling and I'm not sure what's going on. And she says, describe it. And I said, well, like my stomach feel a little upset and like randomly my heart will just start racing and then my palms will get sweaty. And she got this big old grin on her face and she looks at me, she goes, Brenda, that's fear. She said, you're afraid. And I cried. I cried for two reasons. And one was that I was afraid. So fear elicits tears. Tears that come not because I'm sad, but because I'm awake. So I started crying because I realized she was right. I'm afraid. And then I started crying because I realized how long it's been since I felt afraid that when it came, I didn't recognize it anymore. Because God is good. Because I take everything. I'm going to move on to sex in just a minute. I hear you. I'm trying to pay attention to the time, but this stuff is so important to me. You want to know why? What is at the bottom of everything I'm afraid of? Look, if this is the only thing I have here, people, it is not a commercial, but so if I have this and this is a fear, I'm afraid I'm going to get fired. I'm afraid they're going to ask me to stay and give me a promotion. I'm equally afraid of the bad and the good, the things that I have labeled the bad and the good. And that's why it's important that I stop labeling things in my life. The things that are in my life, I can only see, feel, and hear. I want to not label them. I want to experience them. So pretend like this is something I'm afraid of. I'm afraid, let me think. Well, I can't think of something recent, but okay. Fear. Afraid that I won't have nowhere to live, right? Okay, so that's a fear. I'm afraid I don't have anywhere to live. But here's the fear. Down from the there's a bunch of threads that run down the bottom of that experience, the fear. And those threads all go to the same place. Here's what is at the end of every single fear I experience, every single fear I have. What's at the very bottom of that fear are the things that I believe about God that no longer serve me. So, for there was a time in my life when I believed that God was out to get me. If I am still operating in Alcoholics Anonymous in the middle of my life with the idea that God is out to get me, the result will be nil until. I used to be afraid that God was going to punish me. If I'm 33 years sober, or 30, or 29, or 27, or 25, and all the other numbers, and I am still afraid that God is going to punish me, the result is nil until. I'm afraid this is one of my big fears a long time ago, was that I had disappointed God. So there was somebody in my head going, you got a good thing and you messed it up. You broke it. You walked away from it. What's wrong with you? Why can't you do better? Why don't you like that? There was a voice in my head saying that. I thought it was God. It was not God. God is not in the business of punishment. God is not in the business of punishment. In my experience, again, I'm talking about me. It was not God who was saying those things. It was my ego. It was my disease. It was that part of my alcoholism that does not wish to relinquish control. It's that part of my ego that is not open to more information. It's the part of me that when we're in person and meeting that we hold hands and say whatever prayer at the end, my ego is up erasing the board, erasing every new idea, everything I told myself, oh my God, that was so good, I'll never forget it. But the ego's erasing it, and I get to the car and go, God, what was it that dude said? I have 33 years. Well, quite honestly, I started journaling when I was 12, 11, 12, 13, and I have written my entire life. It used to be a big joke among my friends because we would be out at restaurants, back in the day when we all went together after, and I'd be explaining something and I'm like, well, look, it's like this. And then it goes this and this, because because like that's how it went in my life. And then I'm like, oh, and they're at the end, they'd go, can I keep the napkin? Because apparently I don't carry around no paper, people. And so they'd take the napkin, and I think it was when I celebrated 20 years sober that many of my friends all throughout the day sent me pictures of themselves with their napkins. It reminded me again that this has been a long conversation. Sobriety has been A long conversation. I'm gonna go on to discussing the sex part, but look, just one thing in case I've already lost your attention, but I'm gonna talk about sex just a minute. So this is it. This is like five, four or five fear sex. Four or five fear sex. If you don't hear anything else, four or five fear sex is about consenting to being vulnerable. What? Get out of here, lady. Let's see how many people left the meeting. Wait. Okay, go. We're at 52. Okay, now I'm gonna get talk about vulnerability and sex and all right, everybody stay. You get like chocolate at the end. Chocolate at the end. All right, so it's about that's it. That I'm not deciding, do I do my inventory? I'm not deciding, do I do the truth? I am not deciding any of that. The consent I am giving is whether or not I'm willing to come on here and let you see me. And let you find me wanting, and let you decide that at 33 years sober, you hope to God that you don't have what I have. I will take that risk that you'll say, God, did you listen to that Brenda woman? She just will not shut the hell up. And like, I don't ever learn anything from her. I take that risk every time. Every time I open my mouth to share. When I moved, one time when I moved, I befriended one of the women who was kind of leading the group, and we got, just like I was trying to get to know people. And about 3 years after we had begun this friendship, she came to me one day and she goes, I owe you amends. And I couldn't think of for what. And she says to me, she goes, well, people knew that we were friends, and so they'd ask me about you. And I would tell, they'd ask me, what's she like when you guys are just hanging out? What does she enjoy? What kind of music does she listen to? And what I told them was that you did not practice the principles of this program, that you were not the person you said you were from behind the podium. And I was devastated. And I said to her, I said, why would you say that to them? And she said, I said that to them because people used to come up to me and ask me how I was and what was going on in my life. And once they found out I was friends with you, they would just ask me about you. And then she said to me, she goes, how do I fix this with you? And I said to her, go back to every single person you told that lie to and tell them what you just told me. And then you'd have fixed this with me. She never spoke to me again. I never saw her again. I pray for her until today. I cannot use sex. That was all the transition time we have. I can't use sex as a substitute for what I'm not willing to show the person I'm sleeping with. I just did a sex, the spirituality of sex for the addition by subtraction group. So if you want to look for that recording somewhere, somebody has it. That was this week, I think. Addition by subtraction. Anyway, so this about sex, okay? So I can't use it to substitute for the things I'm not willing to do. I can't use it to substitute for being vulnerable. I can't use it to, I can't substitute sex for the truth. I can't use sex to make you be quiet. I can't use sex to make you think better of me. I cannot use sex in that way. And then the traditions talk about what happens to me if I use sex in that way. It says, if I know that I've done wrong, I don't sleep with married people anymore. If I know that I've done wrong and I realize that it was in my motives and I pray to God to help me with my ideal, I'm liable to stay sober and have learned my lesson and be able to move through the rest of my life. If, however, I am behaving in Alcoholics Anonymous as if this is a right I have, that it's okay that I destroy marriages, that it's okay that I destroy hearts, that it's okay that I lie and lie and lie. Look, I had somebody recently, and I'm like, we were walking around going, look, that's an apple. That's a fabulous apple. Like, we were in total agreement, that's an apple. One day she shows up and she said, hey, what you doing with that pear? And I'm like, what you talking about? What pear? She's like, that pear. And I'm like, it's not a pear, that's an apple. And it's like, that's not an apple. What? That's not an apple. I'm like, how long have you thought that's a pear? And she said, I thought it was a pear all along. If somebody says to you, I thought it was a pear all along, walk away, walk, run, take all your books and run. Because I cannot use sex as something that I have a right to use to control you, manipulate you, hide the truth from you, and keep sex as something I use to deal with the emotions I'm not willing to run through the steps. Now, wait, let me see. I want to see how mad everybody is. Hold up. Oh, doggone it. We're at 48. If anybody knows the three or four folks that left, call them. Tell them that it got way better and I admitted I was wrong at the end. So I'm going to finish with this. So I didn't physically birth children, but they all belong to me. So if I say to you, my son Michael, you understand. My niece and my daughter Bianca. They're all mine. And so I have a son named Michael, and he has two little girls. And they had a birthday party at one of those indoor play things, which, by the way, if you haven't been to one of those, it's a real way to check your spiritual maintenance. Bunch of 7-year-olds running wild in this huge place that is filled with germs. And okay, we used to eat paint off the merry-go-round. What am I judging? Okay. So anyway, we go to this thing. She's having a birthday party, and I'm sitting with Michael. We're talking, kind of watching the kids play or whatever. And all of a sudden, Callie, the youngest one of them, starts to walk toward us, and we both registered that she was afraid. Up, Michael jumped out of his seat and kind of nonchalantly walked quickly over to where she was, picked her up, didn't say a thing, picked her up, put her on his shoulder, and then came back over and sat down and just held her. And just held her and talked to me, and we talked about other things. And then at some point, she was willing to sit up, and he sat her up and gave her some water and all this, and gave her a minute, and then said, "What are you feeling?" And she said, "Daddy, I couldn't see you for a minute, and I got scared." And he goes, "Oh yeah," he goes, "I know, I that's happened to me before." She goes, "I didn't know where you were, and I felt like I was lost. And then I didn't recognize anybody." She goes, "I didn't know where Anna was. I didn't know where mommy was." And she sat there for as long as she needed to. And when she got ready to go play again, my son Michael says to her, "Hey, can you really do that backflip thing?" And she's like, "Yes, Dad." He goes, "Let me come watch." That is the experience that I'm having with God around fear and sex. I get to these places where I work myself into a corner and I can't see God. I can't see my sisters. I can't see my teachers. I can't see the truth. And God walks toward me and without asking a question, without saying, "How do you forget I'm here? How do you what?" Without any of that, he picks me up and he holds me and he walks back to where he was, and he sits down and he holds me until I'm ready to sit up. And then he says to me, "What are you feeling?" And then I said to him, I said, "Well, I get scared because I'm going to go to the Boston thing meeting and it's in the middle of the day. And I don't know if I have recovery in the middle of the day because usually I'm chasing all around a bunch of sixth graders who think they know what's best." And until that, and he's like, "Okay, we'll take some water," because he was like, "Calm down." And so he gives me some water. And then I tell him I didn't recognize anybody. I couldn't find my sponsor. I couldn't remember the truth. I didn't know where I was going. I got disoriented. Fear and my relationships in sex disorient me. And then when I feel ready to go out and do one more day sober, to go out and tell one more truth, to go out and take one more inventory, to say to myself, I am not gonna be, you know, I didn't come all this way, cry all those tears, tell all that truth, write all those inventories, sponsor all those people, travel to all those conferences to get to a place in my life to be afraid. I am not doing it. And so the question is, what am I settling for now? There's a little picture in my in the other room in the other room that says, if you want to go somewhere you've never been, you're going to have to do something you've never done. Sometimes the only mode of transportation is a leap of faith. And sometimes I will have to do it afraid. I pray that all of God's love and joy be mine. I pray that all of God's love and joy be yours. I pray that God's love and joy be with us all, this God, or something better. That's it.